Kathy Bates. Ambulance Girl. Robin Thomas. In a dark recording studio, a smiling woman in her 50s sits opposite a stubbly man of similar age.
You know, Michael and I are on an eternal quest for many perfect things.
One of them is perfect corned beef hash in a diner. We have found something about as close to perfect as I've eaten in the last 10 years. Not far from our house in Grafton, Connecticut, at the Laurel Diner.
I think there's something to be said about Zen and the art of the perfect corned beef hash.
Oh, there's a lot to be said.
Because so many gourmet-style restaurants screw up corned beef hash by adding the most god-awful ingredients. The Laurel Diner serves the classic workman-style corned beef hash made from scratch.
And it's fantastic. In fact...
That's us, Jane and Michael Stern. You may know us from the magazine column we write, or from the books we've written together, 35 and counting, or from our radio show, or from TV. Everywhere we went, people would always say, God, I wish I had your life. You've got a great job, a great-looking husband. You get to eat what you want. You get to travel to all these fabulous places. You've got the perfect life. And I did.
She shakes hands.
Kind of, but not exactly.
And I let you in because, well... housewives can get awfully bored sometimes.
Jane sits glumly on a sofa flicking through TV channels.
Of all the primates, baboons most commonly interact with people. They are the most adaptable of the ground-dwelling primates and live in a wide variety of habitats. Intelligent and...
The fact was that I was having a sort of midlife event.
I was a producer in Minneapolis on the phone. We fly out there on the 10th, in case you're interested.
And the flames quickly spread, burning the entire house to the ground.
Yeah, the station's arranged a bus trip for us with listeners to a little restaurant. It's about 3 hours into the country. So, what have you been doing?
Watching TV.
A green and yellow parrot. Michael stands at the foot of the stairs and shrugs his shoulders.
Go ahead.
I'm going to the bar.
Michael had been sober for a little over a year, and now he had started spending more and more time at AA meetings or out at High Lonesome Stables with his horse. I didn't have to take care of him anymore, not the way I had.
After your ride, are you coming straight home?
I think. Kirby, come.
Be careful. KT starts acting spooked.
Jen, I'll be okay.
On TV, a horse throws a rider.
Michael, wear a helmet!
In stables...
What's that Jane girl up to today?
Sitting in front of the TV in her bathrobe.
She's sick?
Not exactly. More like impossible to be around right now. You know, there's a saying in AA, Pete. Spouses get better much slower than we do.
White-bearded Pete in his 50s smiles. Michael unclips his grey horse and stables it.
I knew Michael had reached a point where he was frustrated with me and my phobias. I've always had fears about just about everything, you name it. Now fear was taking hold of my life, but I just couldn't do anything about it.
In a bookstore, Jane takes a copy of Depression and You from a shelf, but is startled by an assistant.
Jane?
Oh.
Hi, I haven't seen you in a while. What have you been up to?
Oh, work. Working. Some new projects.
Have you seen the display? Well, make sure you do. Okay.
Jane looks at the display of her books. Above the books, a poster of her and Michael.
Working? You're working on trying to get out of bed in the mornings. Why don't you tell her that?
Jane's image comes to life on the poster. Poster Jane looks at real Jane, who turns away. Fans get on a bus.
Welcome to Minneapolis.
Hi. We're really glad to be here.
Michael, I can't do this.
Hi, Michael.
The idea of being trapped with a group of strangers for 3 hours on a bus going who knows where, driven by somebody I don't even know.
Hi.
I mean, does he look like the kind of bus driver that would stop the bus if I asked him to?
Jane, these people paid $100 apiece to meet us.
You think they'd let me drive the bus?
No.
You?
No.
Jane, you said you might want to ride in the car with me.
Yes.
A white-haired woman.
It'll be okay. I'll talk to all the listeners when we get to the restaurant.
She backs away sheepishly. Michael shakes his head and boards the bus.
Let's go.
This is the final boarding call, flight 387.
They loved the food.
In an airport.
Excuse me.
He sits away from her.
They loved the tote bags.
His laptop.
I don't know why we couldn't have eaten someplace in Minneapolis.
They live in Minneapolis.
Well, there are plenty of great restaurants in town we wouldn't have to take a bus to.
Well, the point for them was to go on an adventure somewhere new.
I think that's stupid.
Back at home, she snoozes on the sofa.
Some days I'd be so down in the dumps I could barely leave the house.
A dog chews at her snacks.
Michael told me about the sign that was always up at his AA meetings. You are not alone. But I was.
She snoozes and falls off the sofa. Outside a garage, she waits for her car to be fixed.
Being a writer is not like having a job. It's a weird, unstructured life. Stretches of time went by now when I saw no one but Michael. It was hard to find the energy to get dressed. Why get dressed? There was no pressing need to. No pun intended.
The mechanics laugh at her fluffy animal slippers. Jane and Michael ride two horses across a bridge.
Oh. Jane? Jane, what's the matter?
She mops her brow, shaking.
No.
She nods.
I'm okay.
She puts her cowboy hat back on. Michael moves his grey horse forwards and she starts to follow on her black horse. She places her hand in front of her mouth, her eyes wide open. Michael's gaining distance. She looks at her gloved hand, which is shaking. Later, she walks her horse into the corral. Pete's there.
I don't know what's with me. I got all panicky and couldn't do it. I couldn't ride.
So you got off and you walked. It's no big deal.
Pete, you know me. I love to ride. I've ridden since I was a little girl.
She stands and watches Michael untacking in the stables.
Michael's changed. Every day he gets up, works 2 hours, goes to his meeting at 7. Some days he goes to 3 meetings. And then he comes out here. It's to get away from me. And I know it.
Oh, I don't think that that's the case.
Has he said anything to you?
Pete turns his head away.
No, I guess he wouldn't.
Yeah, Michael's still Michael. Look, if you want, I'll go out there with you on the trail next time. I'll balk ahead of you and Pagan and lead you.
You would, wouldn't you?
Well, I said I would.
She smiles at him and touches his hand. A restaurant in New York City. Michael takes a picture of his food.
I'm just thrilled to be working with you guys.
Us too.
You know, we really like the region-by-region idea for the new edition. Aren't you in Chicago next week?
Yeah, we're going to try that new steak place that you mentioned.
Oh, you will love it. Oh, you'll love it. Anyway, the book. Yeah, it just seems to make more sense to break it down that way, in case somebody's using it on a road trip, you know, instead of state-by-state.
This meatloaf rocks.
So how do you guys work?
Well, in the old days, we'd sit down together.
In the old days, we did everything together.
But now, I pretty much do a draft, and then Jane takes it, and she does a draft, and then we look at it together.
Because we'd like to have this for our spring list.
Shouldn't be a problem.
She smiles at him.
Shouldn't be. Michael, where are you going?
I'm just
going
to get something to drink. Jane, please.
Please what?
You're so needy.
I am not.
You know, you've become this anxiety-riddled recluse because you don't have anybody to micromanage anymore.
Okay, let's just... can you give me a Danish or something?
You know, you've micromanaged me all these years. You want to know the truth.
Would you stop it with that word? I hate those words. It's like empower or proactive.
Jane, it sucks being the center of somebody else's life.
Her face drops.
I'll be right back.
She sighs. A plane taxis. Inside, Jane and Michael.
Ladies and gentlemen, the tower has just directed us to a different runway. Please remain seated with your seatbelts fastened. We should be airborne shortly.
Are you okay?
Yeah. As long as it's moving in the direction it's supposed to be going.
Cabin lights come on.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it looks like we're going to be sitting here for a while. The tower seems to be having some traffic control problems. I'll let you know when we're cleared for takeoff.
She closes her eyes and throws her head back. Outside, planes queue on the runway.
This thing is like an MRI machine with wings.
She kneads and squeezes a blue stress ball in her hands. She fidgets and looks around.
Why isn't there an update from the pilot? It's been like 2 hours.
She squeezes the stress ball harder and clutches her head.
Do you have any snacks?
Sorry, there's nothing to eat on this plane.
I need something. I don't know what we're going to do. Last time you passed out.
Jane's now standing by a row of teenage boys. One of them's perspiring. Jane goes back to her seat and reaches into her bag.
It's an emergency.
She takes out a big bar of chocolate and proffers it to the boy.
Would you like this? It might help.
Thanks.
He takes it, looking a little puzzled, and then snaps a bit off and puts it in his mouth. Jane squeezes the stress ball and looks round to see the boy smiling and joking. She looks at Michael, attracts his attention, and nods towards the boys.
That looks like you saved the day.
Guess I did.
She nods, a big smile on her face. Winter, a sunny street with patches of snow. Jane drives past a volunteer's wanted notice by the fire station.
I couldn't stop thinking about the boy on the plane. It made me look at everything I knew about myself that I wanted to be different. So right then and there, I made a decision. I decided to take control of my life.
You, lady, I don't think this is for you.
Oh, well, I sure would like to give it a try.
You're talking car accidents. You have to be prepared to deal with all sorts of unpleasant sights. And I mean some pretty damn grisly ones.
I would imagine.
Death and disfigurement? I mean, some of us end up heaving our guts out. You can't help it.
Oh, I hate vomit.
Loads of vomit.
I try never to vomit.
They'll vomit all over you. I guarantee you. Cooped up in the back of an ambulance.
Cooped?
Racing down some bumpy road. You haven't kept in shape.
I understand. Thanks, though, for your time.
Yeah, sure.
She leaves the station.
Hey.
She passes a man, then stops, pauses, turns her head back a little, and carries on walking. She's wearing a white carnation, black coat, and red silk scarf. In the stable yard, Pete goes to investigate loud bangs coming from a horse box. He opens the door.
Oh. Just trying to get a feel for it in there. What it feels like for the horses. You know, all cooped up.
Is this a writer's thing?
Right. Research.
He gives a nod. And closes the door. Inside, Jane places her hands on the walls.
Piece of cake.
Now, back at the ambulance station, she leans across to desk clerk Walter and attracts his attention.
Can I look inside the ambulance?
The old man sighs and opens the back of an ambulance for her.
Do these doors open from the inside?
Yeah.
She gets in.
What is it exactly that you're looking for?
Oh, nothing, really. I've just never been inside an ambulance before.
She looks around at the gurney and respiratory equipment and touches a bar on the roof. She smiles at Walter and starts to enter gingerly further in. She sits on a paramedic's jump seat.
Good. I mean, you're not trapped in here with the sick vomiting person.
Walter looks a little bemused. She gets up and comes to the back.
You know what? I really want to sign up for that class.
Walter looks down through his glasses.
Hey, where were you?
The Grafton Firehouse. Mm. Guess what?
What?
I'm gonna be an EMT. I'm not kidding, Michael.
Who said you were? What do you do as an EMT?
Well, you pull dying people from car wrecks, stuff like that.
Jane, you're 52 years old. You're not gonna be a fireman.
EMT.
EMT.
You know, the other day, helping that kid on the plane, that was one time in my life when I didn't feel like the whole world was collapsing around me.
Yeah, but come on, Jane. I mean, not gonna be an EMT. Every twinge you get, it's like a brain tumor, MS,
well,
stroke.
You look at my family. I mean, yeah. Every one of them, they wouldn't fly, they wouldn't take boats, they wouldn't talk on public telephones, they wouldn't eat in restaurants because they were afraid they would be poisoned. I mean, I'm just like them. My whole life, I've just been paralyzed by my fears.
Well, number one is admitting that you're powerless.
I know. 12 steps. But this is not like that.
She grabs a cheese grater.
I've done powerless. Just doesn't cut it. Not anymore.
A busy police station. Jane pushes her way towards a desk officer. As she reaches the counter, he leans towards a microphone.
Don't loiter in the lobby.
She flusters, dropping her handbag and book.
Don't park in the spaces in the parking lot reserved for police cars.
She picks them up.
Yeah.
She glances at the desk officer, who raises his eyebrows. Later, Jane sits at a desk in a room with others, laying out stationery. A stocky man enters.
Okay, people, listen up.
She swallows.
Let's get started. Though you will be volunteers, your training will be the same as the paid professional.
Like your sister.
You will know how to insert airways to allow the patient to breathe. You will assist paramedics who must insert needles into chest cavities if the patient's lungs collapse.
Hi, I'm Jane. Dot.
The trainer glances at pretty latecomer Dot.
When the paramedic has to administer morphine, you will spike the bag and set it up so that instead of a bone-jarring ride to the hospital, the patient will feel like they're a baby in its mother's arms.
He looks sternly down at Jane.
As an EMTB, you will be smack in the middle of the emergency care hierarchy. This is the most stressful job of all. Know the warning signs of stressed people: anxiety, guilt, indecisiveness, insomnia.
I already have all of those. How will I know when the job's getting to me?
The trainer stands, arms behind his back, looking unsmilingly at Jane. Her smile soon vanishes. Now he's passing around latex gloves.
BSI, body, substance, isolation. BSI, I'm number one.
BSI, I'm number one.
You are an EMT. You do not even think about touching a patient without at least a barrier of rubber between you and them. I'm number one.
I'm number one.
You are important to yourself and to the rescue unit. You arrive on a scene and someone is pointing a gun at you. The house is burning down. Toxic fumes are clouding the air. Or some psychotic is telling you the Martians have ordered him to kill you now. You do not attempt to be a hero. You run for cover and get help. That's what being number one is all about. BSI, I'm number one.
BSI, I'm number one.
Louder.
BSI.
She beams broadly as she cups her latex-gloved hands over her mouth. Night time. Jane's back home. She creeps into the bedroom, sees Michael sleeping, and creeps back out. He stirs and turns over.
Jane? Are you all right?
Michael, this is it. This is the other side of what happens if you ever have to call 911.
I hope I never have to.
Yeah, but if you do... Ed, he's our teacher. He's this professional EMT from over in Bridgeport. You wouldn't believe some of the stuff he's seen. And next time, he's going to teach us how to cut people's clothing off really fast and look them over for bullet wounds that have entered and exited.
Honey, are you going to get undressed?
When there's an emergency, you gotta be able to jump in your clothes and get out the door in a split second, day or night.
Oh, boy.
This stuff is amazing.
Good, good. Let's go.
He lies back and closes his eyes. Jane clasps her hand over his chest and smiles. Next morning in the kitchen.
Scapula. Maxilla. I love these words. Cyanotic means blue from lack of oxygen.
Ah, I didn't know that.
Oh, my God. You have to look at this.
I'll pass, thanks.
No, you have to look at this. The skin's been peeled off like a glove.
She flips the book shut and looks up.
I can't do this.
They're probably just showing you the worst-case scenario.
He rustles his paper. Back at first aid, the group examine small silver baby dolls.
Save it from choking.
Jane hits the back of the doll's head, which promptly comes off. Ed looks askance at her as she searches round.
You killed him.
She shuffles over to retrieve the head from under a table and proceeds to apply some force and twisting motion in an attempt to repair the decapitated infant. Ed watches, aghast.
Maybe mine's defective.
A man performs CPR on a dummy. Jane and Dot drop a mannequin on the floor. They giggle hysterically as they proceed to bash the mannequin's head on a table and then struggle to lift it onto another table.
Stern, you killed him. He had a heart attack and now he has fatal head trauma.
Jane sits on the dummy.
Stern, rescue Randy is not a beanbag chair.
She nods, breathing rapidly. A black SUV speeds down a sunny highway. Inside, Jane and Michael.
Michael, slow down. This is a metal cage waiting to kill us in a dozen ways I never even knew about.
Oh, great.
You get trapped inside underwater. Seatbelt can crush my intestines.
Yeah, here we go. A little bit of knowledge some of us get nuts about.
Hit your head on the dashboard, send your brain bouncing around inside your skull.
You know, it's not just cars, Jane. Dogs have big teeth because of your puncture wounds.
Shut up.
Bees can sting you, you can go into anaphylactic shock.
Stop!
He smiles at her. In the stables, Pete's sitting with Jane and Michael.
I take this horse, and I walk him around back, and I stand there for a minute, and then I bring him out again.
Same horse.
Oh, sure, same damn horse. And he looks it up and down. How much? I tell him 20,000. And Joey starts peeling off the bills.
I gotta go. I'm gonna be late.
You go get him, ambulance girl.
See you guys.
She leaves them, smiling. Pete pours from a flask.
Hey, Pete, listen. I told Jane that the next time we go out to Wyoming or the Dakotas on a research trip, I want you to come with us, too.
Oh, I'd love to see that country.
Yeah. Yeah, just the two of us, we'd go out there for a couple days and ride out and get lost.
You remind me to tell Jane about the mare in heat, my stallion going right at it, with me hanging on for dear life.
Yeah, that's her kind of story.
That Jane's a great girl.
Michael purses his lips and nods. In the ambulance class, Ed pays his stethoscope round neck.
Listen up, people. We need to walk through this together. 1 out of 20 of you has a main artery that is congenitally faulty and will at some time hemorrhage. If you're lucky and it is found in time, you will not die. Stern, take your hand off your carotid artery. You're stopping blood supply to the brain.
Jane's pumping a cuff on Dot's upper arm and listening through a stethoscope. She keeps pumping.
Ow, 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 stop it, you're hurting me. Oh.
Machinery's not my strong suit.
Clearly.
Dot rubs her arm. They swap, and now Dot watches the gauge rise as Jane winces a little. Dot releases the pressure. Her jaw drops.
Your blood pressure's very high.
Jane looks at the gauge, rips the cuff off and fumbles with it. Jane's face sours and she glances around.
It's true.
At home, Jane's pedaling on an exercise bike.
What makes the condition better or worse?
I can't for the life of me remember how many liters of oxygen are in an M-sized O2 tank.
That's important?
Yes. Sometimes I think I'm too stupid for this class. And other times, some of the lectures are like, do not try to replace someone's organs if they are hanging from their body. They say this with a straight face. Who would do these things?
The TV's on.
What's that?
It's called Pass EMT.
If there is an impaled object in the neck, do not remove it.
I'm going to watch it twice a day until it soaks in, and I pass my boards.
Well, just be careful. You're not exactly Lance Armstrong.
I have to start working out every day. I'm going to do this, Michael.
I think it's good, Jane.
You do?
Well, yeah, you're doing your own thing. It's good to see.
Looking at the eyes, do they respond to light? Are they equal?
She glances at him as he leaves, and then back to the TV.
We'll have the patient follow our index finger.
She pedals faster. A hunky guest speaker, Spencer the physio, at the first aid class.
On almost every call, you will be responsible for lifting and moving patients without aggravating their current condition.
I may be more than twice his age, but I don't care.
You must be knowledgeable about proper methods of lifting and moving to prevent injury to yourself. So, flex at the knees using your legs like this to save your back.
Dot and Jane watch closely as he carefully sits the mannequin up.
Straight up. And right back down.
Dot and Jane have a good review of Spencer.
Well, who wants to help me out up here?
Jane's hand goes straight up. He motions her over with a smile.
Spencer and I will now hoist the patient in the air and place her in the stair chair.
Ed looms over.
How much do you weigh, Stern?
I'd never volunteer that.
Ed grabs her shoulders and sits her up to face Spencer.
You're unconscious, Stern.
She closes her eyes after Ed's rebuke, and they lift her. They place her in the chair, and she daydreams of her and Spencer.
Hi. I'm Jane. I'm an EMT.
Hi, Jane.
In her soft focus world, Spencer leans forward to kiss her. Snapping back to reality, she looks up to see an unimpressed Ed and an eyebrow-raising Spencer looming over. A fire station.
Do not touch anything. Do not talk to the firemen. Do not ask them questions.
I feel like a second grader going to a museum.
Stern!
Yes, sir?
He unfolds a red chair.
Stair chair. It's a folding chair used for carrying someone in a sitting position down the stairs. You be the patient.
He clips Spencer into the chair. Spencer smiles at Jane, who smiles back. Ed motions to Jane.
Come on. Yeah.
Don't worry. I'm really strong.
On my count of three. One, two, three.
Watched by the rest of the group, she struggles and winces as she maneuvers Spencer down the stairwell.
I have to stop. Oh.
Stern, maybe you should take the foot part. It's a little lighter.
I don't do backward, even at home.
Stern!
She makes her way down to the foot end.
Tell you when to step off. Lift. Step. Step, just don't let it hang in the air. Keep both hands in a chair, you will drop him.
Spencer goes tumbling, Jane's sweating.
Oh, no.
Fail.
Stern, see me after class.
She puffs her way back into the firehouse restroom. Firefighters are sitting round playing cards. She flops on a sofa among them.
Can't call 911. You're all here.
At the stables.
I couldn't even walk down a flight of stairs without holding on.
I'd trust you to carry me.
Well, you'd really have to be out of it.
Besides, that's what the cops and firemen are there for, to help you lift people.
Ooh, big hunky man at my command. Now I feel better. You sure you don't mind if I use you as a guinea pig?
I love playing doctor with you.
She deflates the cuff on his arm.
Normal.
Jane stands up and Pete rolls his sleeve down. She walks over to a saddle.
It's a gorgeous saddle. There's nothing you can't do. Michael and I wish you had been our father.
That would have made you some kind of perverts.
Okay, then. You can be Michael's father. My father. My father had a steel plate in his skull. Did I ever tell you that? He'd just go off, you know, these uncontrollable rages. It was something about him playing on the trolley tracks when he was a kid. His forehead caved in and came out again, kind of weird, I guess, where the plate was. I used to have these nightmares about Frankenstein's monster chasing me. When I was 8, my mother packed me up and ran away with me while he was out walking her dog. She studied to be a concert pianist, and when we finally found a place, the only thing she brought was her grand piano. So we ate our meals on top, and then we slept underneath.
Well, that's a vision.
Yeah. Well, he never forgave her for leaving. He threatened to kill us both. I was afraid to leave the house.
He rubs his palms together and stands.
When was this? How long ago?
Well, it was when I... It was a long time ago.
Yeah, a long time ago.
She looks down, and then they both look in the same direction.
Let me see if I can find my old binoculars, so I can see back that far.
She smiles, and they hug warmly. In the kitchen at home, Jane sits at a laptop. Michael's washing up.
Suppose I should wait until I even pass my boards. Of course I'm going to pass my boards. They have all these cool websites where you can order this EMT stuff.
Oh, damn it!
Apply pressure. I'll call 911.
No, you won't. It's not that bad. What are you so happy about?
I'm not.
Well, you don't exactly inspire confidence.
Apply more pressure.
Yeah, you are.
Do you want me to do that?
No.
Here.
No. Jane, please. Stop.
Elevate it.
Look, easy. I'm not exactly Rescue Randy.
I know. Rescue Randy lets me help him.
Please.
Oh, I think you should go to the ER. Let me drive you.
No, I'm going to go at the CKT.
What? Keep applying pressure.
Here.
Michael, at least let me take a look at it.
No, this EMT stuff is making you even more of a control freak. Kirby, up.
The dog jumps in the car, followed by Michael. Jane lets herself in the passenger side. Later, in the stables, his hand bandaged, Michael tightens the girth on his horse. Jane watches with a look of concern. She sees Pete and points to her palm, indicating where Michael was cut. Pete turns to Michael.
Hey, you should get some stitches in that boy. You need to get to a doctor.
What?
Michael glances down at the blood-stained bandage, then looks up, and then at Jane. She nods at him, then looks at Pete. Michael looks sideways.
What?
Dr. Leeds, please report to physical therapy.
Oh.
Dr. Leeds, please report
to... Oh. Oh.
Jane, why don't you just go wait outside?
Oh.
Just go wait outside.
Okay, you can be okay?
I'll be fine.
Okay.
She leaves the surgeon's room, her mouth open.
Dr. Phillips, please call 556.
Michael watches her with furrowed brow. She lies across a couple of waiting room chairs.
Sometimes life is a waiting game. Now all I had to do was pass my boards. I'd have to wait 6 long, agonizing weeks until the National Registry of EMTs gave me a thumbs up or down. Those weeks crawled by, and then one day, I heard.
Oh my gosh.
She takes a package from the mailbox and rips it open. She runs in.
I passed! Michael!
Way to go, Jane!
I passed the national board! I more than passed. I did exceptionally well. Look, my EMT certification.
And my wallet cards and look, patches I can sew on.
Oh, I'm proud of you, honey.
Oh. He hugs her.
Wow. I'm an EMT.
She gingerly steps into the restroom of the firehouse. A firewoman chats to the burly fireman as they play pool. One of them leans over and lines the cue up with the cue ball. He takes a shot, but a hand comes down and takes the cue ball as it nears the pocket. Suddenly, all the firemen are beefy hunks dressed in their orange trousers and braces with white t-shirts stretched over bulging pecs. They smile and wink as she looks round the room. She chuckles to herself as she snaps back to reality.
Hi, Jane?
I'm Audrey.
Hi.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
This is for you. See, it flashes the date and hour in military time. You're going to need that when you fill out the ambulance run sheet.
This is so terrific.
Do you know Vince Milnick from the gas station, our chief? And his brothers Frank and Joey, Walter. And this is Grant. He is going to give you your radios and your pager.
Nice to meet you.
Hey.
She's got all her kit and her jacket at home. She dances round. She puts the helmet on backwards. Michael comes in and stands watching.
There's a huge decal on the hood of your car.
It's the Star of Life. I put it there. I'm in love with my sticker. It's like this great bonanza of stuff they give you. Keep the blood and debris out of my eyes.
They gave you all this stuff?
Some of it. Some of it I ordered off the internet. I am G65. That's my number. Is this too much? I don't care. I love it. Okay, I want to know something.
What's that?
You put this in my ear. Where is your heart?
I don't know.
Check your heart to see if you have a heartbeat.
She puts the stethoscope to his chest and they dance together. Night time. They're asleep.
Grafton ambulance personnel, number 6 Perkins Road. Elderly woman fallen, possible broken hip. Come in.
She...
She fumbles with the two-way radio.
G56, responding G56.
Jane, G56 is already signed on the call. You're G65.
I mean G65. I was so paranoid I was gonna do that, and I did it. It's supposed to be like Joe Friday for the radio, not some yent on the telephone.
She stumbles as she tries to get into her jeans. Michael places a pillow over his head. She gets into her car. Blue lights flash on the roof, a big EMT decal on the hood. Her Connecticut number plates read Katie Doll. She pulls up outside a house, quickly dons her rubber gloves, and grabs a medical bag from the back of the car. A man lets her in.
She tripped. I think she may have broken her hip.
What is your mother's name?
Muriel Bergman.
An elderly woman lies on the kitchen floor.
Hi. I'm Jane with the Grafton Ambulance. Don't worry, Mrs. We're going to fix you right up. Mrs., on a scale of 1 to 10, how bad is the pain?
10.
I'm going to take a quick peek, and I'll try to be as gentle as I can.
Jane plonks her bag on Muriel's leg.
I'm so sorry. I'm going to take your blood pressure.
My mother's had a mastectomy.
Which side? I can't take a reading on the side that's had the surgery.
On both sides.
Sorry. Let's get a pulse. Okay.
Muriel looks a little alarmed. Jane looks at her wrist. She sighs. Audrey steps through the door.
What happened?
She fell.
Did you get a pulse and a BP? No.
Jane looks down. Audrey glances at Jane, then starts the checks. The ambulance has arrived, and the paramedics push the gurney into it. Jane stands watching.
Jane, do you want a ride with us?
Not now. I have company at my house.
Audrey smiles at Jane, and a man closes the ambulance door. The woman's son turns to Jane.
I want to thank you for all your help.
Good night. You're lucky I didn't kill her.
Later, at home, she sits in a chair.
Kept calling her Mrs. like I was the cleaning lady. Boy, that Audrey, boy, she's the real deal. I mean, she knows what to do in an emergency. I only know what to do on paper.
Jane.
And then I couldn't even get in the back of the ambulance. If I had, they would have had another patient on their hands. This whole thing has been a huge mistake.
She puts her hand over her forehead. Michael opens his mouth, pauses, then closes it and frowns.
I'm going back to bed.
I gotta get out of this before I do some real damage.
Let me grab a couple more of those bags.
Hi.
Daytime. Jane strides into the fire station. Walter has a broom.
You're late, young lady. Work detail. Every Saturday morning, 10 sharp.
I went on a call last night.
I read your report.
No, I came down here to resign.
He stops.
I don't think I have what it takes to handle this.
What can't you handle?
Dead people. Puke. Feces. Amputations.
Nobody can. Until you have to do it.
He hands the broom to her and walks off. Jane's in the kitchen at home, chopping peppers.
Grafton ambulance personnel.
She wipes her hands and hurries off. Audrey and a colleague rush a gurney from the back of the ambulance to a man lying on the ground. Walter kneels by the man.
Okay, Jane, go to the rig and get the frack back. Okay.
She runs to the ambulance and begins searching around.
Leg.
You want me to?
Splint the guy, yeah, his right leg's twisted badly. It's broken.
Walter watches Jane as she lays a red board by the man's leg.
Set it next to his leg. Right. Right. Now get the shoe off first.
She struggles with the zip on the man's boot.
It's stuck. I don't know if I can.
You're doing good. That's it. That's it.
Okay, should I keep going?
She pulls the man's socks off, gets some scissors, and cuts his jeans.
Just keep going. Have his pant leg high enough so you can get the splint on.
An injured woman is helped up.
Two, three, go.
They lift the injured man onto a gurney. Jane fiddles with the restraint and clips it together around the man. She stands and watches as the man is loaded into the ambulance.
Go!
What?
Let's go!
A paramedic urges her into the back of the ambulance. She hesitantly steps in.
Where?
The ambulance speeds down the road. Inside...
Cut his jacket off!
Okay! By the way, my name is Jane.
Newtown, this is paramedic unit 787. Do you copy?
Get away from me, you don't touch my leathers.
Get the jacket off.
Okay.
Male patient, 36 years of age, involved in a motorcycle collision. Obvious fracture, right tip, fully immobilized.
My leathers. My leathers!
Don't do that! Don't cut his leathers!
Pulse anxiety. Blood pressure has not been obtained. Respirations, 16.
Copy 787. Awaiting your arrival.
She goes ahead and cuts his leather biker's jacket off. The man is now sedated, wearing an oxygen mask. She takes the stethoscope off and hangs it round her neck. She looks at his foot, which is in a splint. Blonde, pretty Audrey watches a paramedic inject solution into a drip line, then smiles at Jane. Jane smiles back, nods, then looks away. The ambulance races down the highway. Outside A&E.
Good job, Jane.
Double Delta or burgers, ladies?
Donuts.
Donuts. How scary can this be if you get to have donuts afterwards?
These guys, I love them. It's like their favorite things to do are smoke, drink,
eat pizza,
curse,
put out fires.
What else is there?
What else is there?
They have no idea what I do in my other life.
Yeah, they do. In a vague sort of way.
But they don't care. I never used to pay attention to the Milnick brothers. I mean, they were always just mechanics. Filled my gas tank, took my credit card.
Well, on a 1 to 10 scale of gregarious, they're about a 2.
But they're the best.
Jane glances round.
It's so soothing here. I did it. I was able to sit in the back of an ambulance and not freak.
That's great.
It was really good, because his leg was like snapped like a chicken leg and twisted.
I got it.
But I was so busy with what I was supposed to do, I didn't have time to utz about my own stuff.
Well, I stopped by the vest today to pick up Kirby's pills.
Oh.
Jim McGuire says the Milnick brothers like you.
They do? Vince Milnick. He's incredible. You should have seen the way he got the area secured, the two of them off to the hospital.
Guess I'm not your type anymore, huh?
Oh, silly.
The book. Remember our book? Road Food?
He hands her a manuscript.
Great. Great. They like me?
Michael raises an eyebrow. In the studio...
When it comes to fried chicken, which might be the universal all-American food, Stroud's restaurant in Kansas City, Missouri is truly head and shoulders above the rest.
Here's why it's great. Basically, you can't screw up fried chicken that much. I mean, even the worst fast food fried chicken, I could eat a bucket full of, no problem. However, what makes Stroud's fried chicken perfect is that the crust is super thin.
Don't worry. You can't hurt him now.
In a flashback, Jane's in an ambulance supporting a man's head. The paramedic's giving CPR, but the man lies still.
See, this is my idea of chicken heaven.
In the studio...
It started as an old roadhouse dating back to the 1930s. Helen Stroud started it as a fireworks den. Then she decided the fireworks business isn't so good. I'm gonna start frying chicken.
God bless her.
God bless her, she did. And since the 30s, Stroud's has been known as the fried chicken place in Kansas City, which is a very serious fried chicken town in general.
Time passes through a montage. Jane clutches her paramedic's bag and sighs. Hand on heart, she swears allegiance with the other EMTs. She helps a man from a burning building. Daytime. In the kitchen at home, Jane's typing on her laptop. John's sitting at the breakfast bar flicking through a book.
Have a look at Blanche and Bill's Pancake House. I made a couple of changes in that one, too.
Grafton Ambulance Personnel, Crisis Intervention, 2946 Ridgefield Avenue. Please respond.
G65 responding.
Whoa, Jane, what are you doing?
I'll be right back. We'll finish.
We have a deadline. We got a trip coming up.
You resent this, don't you?
Oh, okay.
No, you do. The intrusion of other people's emergencies.
Well, yeah, when we sort of have one of our own. Right.
This isn't just about you anymore, Michael.
Thank God. No, it's about our work, which is us, which you aren't doing anymore. Because being an EMT is... I mean, how can saving lives even begin to compare with writing about chili? Go ahead. Go ahead, Jane. Go be a hero.
This is so idiotic. What are you even talking about? I can't even tell what you're talking about.
I know you can't.
Oh, Jane!
It's dark outside when Jane returns.
In the beginning, when the radio tone would go off, I'd get terrified before I'd pull it together and say, I'm okay, it's okay. Because you never know what horrors you'll find behind those strange doors. This time, it was my own guest room.
Michael?
Think I'm coming down with something.
Well, I'll keep the radio on low.
No, I just need to... just need a good night's sleep. I'll be okay.
Michael's sitting in the spare bed, reading. He flicks the light off, turns on his side and pulls the blanket over him. Jane half closes the door and walks into a separate bedroom. Jane stands by the empty bed for a moment, then sits on it. The corners of her mouth are turned down. She looks at the empty space on the bed. Morning. In her pajamas, Jane wanders into the spare room where John was sleeping. It's empty. John enters in his check shirt and gives her a cursory nod.
Are you feeling any better?
Yeah. I'm gonna go to my meeting.
See you around noon.
He leaves. She glances down at the emergency medical team fleece she's holding and wipes her eye. She slams her hand down on a thick pile of manuscript. She sits and places the manuscript on her laptop.
Okay.
She glances at the manuscript, then sits back and snuggles the fleece across her chest and her mouth. Outside the stables, Pete stands in the middle of an arena. A horse on a lunge rein trots round the outside, while Pete keeps the pace with a long lunge whip. Jane arrives, takes her shades off and leans on the fence.
Has Michael been here?
He came and he went. You missed him. You two haven't been around here much lately.
Not together.
Whoa!
I haven't been able to keep much of a schedule these days.
Yeah, horses need that.
Yeah. People, too.
Well, everybody's different. They need different things. Sometimes they just don't know it. Seems like you lucked out.
Yeah. I always dreamed of having a big family. Now I feel like I do. Whole firehouse full of them.
She sighs. Pete looks sideways at her. In a seafood restaurant, Jane spots a friend.
Vince, hey, there's Vince and Rosemary.
Hi. Jules, this was pretty terrific.
I'm glad I saw you. Gran and Audrey say they'll take care of the photocopying for the training session on Monday if we buy the pizza.
Sounds good to me.
Jane.
The fish stew was perfection. I loved it.
She really did like it.
I mean, the mussels and the clams and the shrimp and the scallops. I mean, there was like every kind of fish in there. It was absolutely amazing. And the stock.
It's an old family recipe. It's secret. At the end, a stir of brandy.
Brandy?
Oh, I am in the restaurant business all my life, and I believe our fish stew beats any fish stew anywhere.
Great with French bread there, Jules.
Michael's a big dunker.
Thanks.
Merci.
She shakes the chef's hand. Michael takes his glasses off. Outside.
Great place, huh?
I'd like to stop at that firehouse we passed coming into town.
Why, do you know them?
No. I just want to get a picture out front. Wherever we travel to across the country, you always have to check out all the AA meetings.
That's different.
Yeah? How?
Look, we have some revisions we have to make this afternoon. Jane, we're seeing Sarah in New York on Thursday.
We need to reschedule that.
She thinks she's getting the book. You've been working on it, haven't you? It's going to be ready, isn't it?
I hope.
Wait. Jane, look. Why don't you just give me what you've done, and I'll finish the rest.
No.
I'm doing all the work anyway while you're out on the fire truck.
That's not exactly fair.
You bet it isn't. I can do this, Jane. Let me just do this, and let's just stop all this pretending.
You pompous...
I don't need you anymore. Not like this. It's like pulling teeth to get you to pay attention.
Oh, get over yourself. You are so full of yourself.
Where do you think you're going?
I'm not getting in the car with you. Poor Michael. All these years I've been on your back. Nothing but this huge neurotic weight around your neck.
No, not all these years. Just since I've been sober.
And now that I'm not... You can't handle it. Now you know what it feels like.
This is about getting back at me?
You can't handle that I don't need you like that anymore.
No. What I can't handle is the fact that I've lost my partner. and not just my writing partner. You're right. I can't handle that.
He walks briskly off, leaving Jane alone looking glum. Nighttime. Jane's standing idly at the sink, staring into space. Michael walks slowly into the kitchen.
Grafton ambulance personnel. Woman needs transport to hospital. Number 6 Gordon Road.
She turns to Michael, who's grabbing a cookie.
The AIDS hospice. I have to go.
She walks past Michael. They don't look at each other.
Yeah, I guess you do.
Jane arrives at the hospice.
She had a seizure?
She's let in and puts on a protective mask. The woman hands her a folder.
You don't need that. Nobody here is going to hurt you.
Well, it's for the protection of the patients as well as us.
Whatever.
AIDS, TB, thrush, hepatitis, brain surgery.
The woman nods sardonically.
She should be dead 10 times over.
Up here.
Jane follows the woman upstairs. An ambulance races by. Inside, a woman on a gurney.
Mavis. Mavis Cotter, 33. It's just, they put hobbies on here. Sewing and gospel singing.
The woman's eyes are half closed, a tube in her nose. Jane's wearing her protective mask.
I really like Shirley Caesar.
I like her too.
My husband, he likes the Clark sisters. His name is Michael. We're writers.
Both of you?
You write together, yeah.
What about
food? We've always loved food. And discussing it is like this primal thing with us. He's the smartest man I've ever met.
Jane's removed the mask.
I'm very fortunate.
Jane looks distant and contemplative.
One of my top 10 wishes would be to sing like Mahalia Jackson. So it will be done. Trouble of the world. Trouble of the world. Trouble of the world. I know I suck.
The woman taps Jane on the shoulder, her smooth black skin on Jane's latex-gloved hands. They look at each other and smile. The woman's eyelids hang heavy as she mouths along while Jane sings.
Soon we will be done with the trouble of the world. Trouble of the world. Trouble of the world. How soon we will be done with the trouble of the world. I'm going home to live with God.
Sees Jane in the hall.
You're up late.
I left the sections I finished on your desk. I'll wrap up the Great Plains this afternoon.
They called from Nikki Rivers. They want us in Chicago on the 5th for the taping.
She nods, leans against the doorpost, and glances down, looking a little lost. She looks up at him.
What?
So what's the deal? You staying in there?
For now.
I really think we should see someone. Talk to somebody. Professional. Michael. This is important.
I think we should too.
Hands in pockets, he saunters off. She stands for a moment, then turns and shuts the door.
Here, sweet boy. Want a little something? There you go.
Jane's feeding the parrot.
Grafton ambulance personnel, baby floating face down in swimming pool, 145 Columbia Heights.
G65 responding.
Baby floating in swimming pool.
Okay.
She strides quickly up to a large house and into a swimming pool building. Inside, a camp man is pacing.
My baby!
What the hell? A dog?
Where is it?
Call 911, said his baby fell in the pool.
Oh, this mud weighs a ton.
When we got here, he was floundering around. He probably had a heart attack.
I don't know what we're supposed to do with it.
We're not going to put him in the ambulance. Jane, come on. We called the animal warden.
Jane leans over to help lift it. And topples in. Audrey chuckles.
You okay?
She swims to the side while the dog's owner wrings his hands. Later, a damp bundle of fur lies under a blanket. A small girl in a pink crown and holding a fluffy wand comes in.
What's wrong with the doggy?
He's dead.
Jane and the other paramedic look at each other. Jane crouches down and gently rubs the still bundle, then stops.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Jane, what are you doing?
He's alive. He's alive. He's alive.
My baby. Winston.
The dog gets up and runs over to his owner. On the way out, Jane passes a stern-faced woman.
Oh, no. It's Rhonda from Animal Control.
False alarm.
Damp Jane sits next to Michael on a sofa. A woman brings a towel in. Jane and Michael fidget uncomfortably.
You sure you don't want to put something else on?
No, I'm fine. It's drying.
Quite an episode.
Yeah, there have been many. Jane saves lives.
My own. I saved my own life when I became an EMT. Michael's angry because I don't need him to prop me up anymore.
Is that right, Michael?
Well, I don't really have this need to have someone to take care of. I never have. That's where you're headed.
Where are you headed?
He doesn't need me anymore. He thinks I don't need him.
That's not exactly how I'd put it. Don't you begin to hate the person that you cling to the most? Isn't that true?
Go to hell!
You go to hell!
I hate you so much.
Michael looks taken aback by this. He looks over to the counselor.
You know something? You would never talk to Vince Melnick like that. You'd treat him with respect. And just because we're married doesn't give us license to muck all over each other.
I first saw Michael when we were in college. I said, "Are you a Scorpio?" I knew he was a Scorpio, too. We were born one day apart. We went to Kenosha, Wisconsin once and had matching Scorpios tattooed on our legs by these Hell's Angels guys.
We've been incredibly close.
Married 33 years. We're acting like we don't know each other.
Incredibly close. Ever since we started riding together, we've always been a foot away from each other in the car. We have a double byline. That constant...
Michael.
We don't have any kids. And, we just have each other. And the animals. And the work. And I love that.
I love it too.
But I don't love it now.
Michael looks straight at Jane.
I don't love it now.
She looks away from him, shaking slightly, looking withdrawn. Nighttime, Michael's sitting in the stables. Pete's nearby cleaning tack.
I got an extra room here. I'm just saying, in a pinch. For either of you.
Yeah. Thanks, Pete. This might take you up on it. I don't know, Pete.
try to be, you know, encouraging about all this EMT stuff. I just keep coming off looking like the bad guy.
If I was you, I'd be into the scotch by now.
Yeah, well, that's just it. I was good for all those years. It was good for her, too, because she knew exactly where I was. Passed out in the chair. But then I got sober, and I wasn't in the chair anymore. I wake up every morning. I wonder where I've been for the last 30 years.
Michael's face carries a contemplative, distant expression. Pete looks at him, furrows his brow, then carries on polishing the reins. A neatly dressed elderly man sits at the end of a long table. Jane's fixing a cuff on when Audrey enters.
Jane? Come here.
Got enough room?
Others enter, one wheeling a gurney. Jane stands aside.
Yeah, I got it.
Audrey listens through a stethoscope, then helps the old man up.
You're gonna be fine.
Take it easy.
That's it.
Jane's left to pack the kit up. She pulls her stethoscope off, a pained expression on her face. Now sitting on her sofa.
Hello?
Jane, it's Audrey. You seemed a little out of it.
I'm sorry, I just had to come home and lie down. I was feeling a little weird.
Jane, are you okay?
No.
Audrey's come over.
Careful, because I will burn you.
I know a good EMT.
Audrey smiles at Jane. Each nurse is a mug.
I cry all the time. In the car, Michael drives, and I cry. I cry every time I see couples our age together. Every restaurant we go into, every motel room. I'm crying.
Every couple goes through this. I mean, you stay together this long.
Yeah, I know all that. I've seen those movies too. It's just that Michael and I love him. And he says he loves me too. We just don't like each other.
Jane fidgets with her fingers.
God, I hope this is nerves and not Parkinson's.
Audrey holds Jane's hand. Jane smiles at her. A kitchen in a TV studio. Michael winks to Jane and she smiles back. They go live.
And we're back with Jane and Michael Stern. Okay, Jane, Michael, tell me, do you ever have time to just stay home and cook?
Yeah, people think we live out of doggy bags, but when we're not on the road, we're very passionate cooks, and we're passionate about kitchenware as well.
Oh, are there pieces you just can't live without?
Well, my favorite thing I have to have is a really good cheese grater.
Okay, tell me, what kind do you like?
Well, Jane and I actually have a battle royale going on about cheese graters. We each have our own.
Yeah, Michael hides his cheese grater.
That's because you don't clean yours properly.
Really?
Jane prefers the boxy type.
I'm so humiliated!
I have this great, fabulous flat one. It's old, I love it, I know exactly how to hold the cheese.
Yeah, Michael is anal retentive. He hides his cheese grater. He thinks I don't know this, but the cheese grater and his coffee beans are hidden somewhere where he thinks I don't know where they are.
Oh, I think I've struck a nerve here.
You know, this naturally leads me to talking about the knives that we own.
Yes, well, I don't like you thinking about knives, Michael, when you're annoyed with my kitchen habits.
I think I'm going to have to see about getting a group rate on a marriage counselor.
I think so, too.
A chef lights a flambé. After the audience leave...
Nikki,
Tristan,
Michael.
You're the best.
That was great.
Yeah,
you're terrific.
I know.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. God, that was amazing.
I know.
Yeah. Even now.
Michael?
Hi.
I've got the information on that barbecue plate.
A studio light goes out. Jane stands alone. Later in the dressing room.
What time is the flight?
3:16.
Why can't they just call it 3:15 or 3:20? Is there a stop?
Non-stop.
What time do we get home?
5:30.
What did you mean when you said even now? It was amazing even now.
With everything falling apart.
She sees him reflected in the mirror.
So afraid.
Jane, we're only going to be in the air for an hour.
I'm afraid nothing can be the same again. That we aren't going to be Jane and Michael Stern again. Anymore.
She turns to look at him and swallows. He turns his head and closes his suitcase. He glances towards her, and she turns back to the mirror, hand on chin, covering her mouth, contemplating her reflection. Jane's in a coffee shop sitting next to Walter.
With everything that gets splattered or sneezed on me, I could get AIDS or SARS or the flu or... This is 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. There are times when I ask myself, why? Why am I doing this? I mean, I became an EMT because I thought it would be a way to get out of my head and force me to think about other people's problems, but it's not working anymore. And I'm letting Michael down. I mean, the better I get at this, I don't know what to do except quit.
You exhaust the hell out of me.
Well, it exhausts me too, sometimes.
Just ease up. You don't have to go out on every call. You know, when I first met you, I thought, oh, here we go. Another damn do-gooder.
I was so scared of you.
You mean you're not anymore? I thought that you'd be the last person on Earth to stick it out.
Me too.
But you did. I know one thing. If I was ever trapped in a burning building, I could count on you to run in there and get me.
He smiles at her. She glances down for a moment, then smiles back. Jane's sitting alone at night in her kitchen. Michael comes down.
Did I wake you?
No, I was awake.
What you're saying is you don't want to be married to me anymore.
I love you, Jane. I'll always love you.
But you don't want to be married to me anymore.
He blinks and closes his mouth, looking close to tears. She nods.
Okay.
Jane.
Enough. What do we do? I mean, I know what we do, but what do we do about our work? Michael, if we're that miserable...
I don't know what I am anymore.
We're incredibly miserable with each other. And we both know that this is it for us. We both know.
Michael purses his lips.
Pete has a spare room.
I know.
There's an apartment for rent behind Melnick's garage.
I know that too.
We worked so hard for this place. I hate the thought of leaving it.
Well, you know, we have certain obligations to work, and I don't see that.
She rests her hand on the worktop and nods.
I'm sorry.
Michael bites his lip, turns away, and wipes an eye.
Now, maybe we can get little houses next to each other, huh?
I wonder what it would take to wall this place in half.
They both smile. She walks over to him.
Well, we have to figure everything out tonight.
She looks up at him, her eyes moist. She swallows. He stands awkwardly, opens his mouth for a moment, then gives a cursory smile, touching her arm as he leaves. She's alone now.
I know what's going to happen. You're going to end up out back of Melnick's garage.
Hands in pockets, wearing one of his usual check shirts over a black t-shirt, unshaven Michael stands alone in the hallway, breathing heavily. He presses his lips together resolutely and turns and walks away.
Motion was passed that the 75th anniversary of the Grafton Volunteer Fire Company would be held on June 23rd. That's Craig's birthday, for any of you who don't know already. Parade at 3 o'clock, following the chili cook-off with celebrity judges. Listen, I hope we don't have any unfortunate incidents like last year. I mean, who would have known that a gas barbecue could cause that much damage?
Young lady, I want to talk to you. Two things.
What did I do?
We were wondering about asking Michael to be a celebrity judge at the chili cook-off. What do you think? Audrey says that the two of you wrote a book about chili.
Yeah, we did. It's called Chili Nation. Huh. I could ask him.
Good, good. Now, the second thing. You're not still considering quitting, are you?
Every day.
We were wondering if you'd take over as firehouse secretary. Ken Rapp's term is up.
Me?
You write every damn thing down anyway, never miss a meeting. Might as well put you to work. Now, don't start up on me.
Yes, absolutely. I would be deeply honored.
All right, then. I'll talk to the chief.
She beams. She flips her phone open.
Michael?
Her face drops as she listens.
I'm on my way now.
She strides briskly down a hospital corridor. She sees Michael standing with his chin resting on the palm of his hand. Pete lies in a bed on a drip, eyes closed.
Michael, what happened?
He was in the barn, and he was cleaning out the stalls. And his brain hemorrhaged. He had a massive stroke.
She looks at Pete. Her eyes well up and her lip quivers. Michael clasps her face in his hands and hugs her. He kisses her hair and they hug. Jane and Michael's bedroom. Michael is lying on his back, eyes closed. Jane is curled next to him, her arm over his stomach. She opens her eyes and looks up at him. The hospital, night time. A frame holds a photo of one black and one grey horse. Beside it, a card. Pete lies sleeping in the hospital bed, several wires attached to him. Michael sits motionless on a chair by Pete's bed. Daytime. Michael leads his horse out of the stables. The bright sun casts shadows as Jane and Michael walk together through the yard.
Hey. People have shown up all morning just to help out.
I keep expecting to see him sitting there like he always is when we come in from a ride. He's always there.
An empty rocking chair with a blanket over the back. Michael sighs, turns and sits on a bale of straw against the fence.
Taught me everything I know about riding.
He wipes the corner of an eye.
About everything.
Jane nods, comes closer to him and takes his hand.
I know he did.
She rests her head on his chest and he rubs her shoulder.
I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do for him.
They walk into the stables together, rubbing the nose of a horse as they pass. Michael hangs his hat. He plants his hands in his jacket pockets, shrugs his shoulders, and looks at Jane.
You know, the other day, we were talking about what we were going to do and our logistics.
Standing with his back to her now, he fiddles with an old hat.
I couldn't stand the thought of losing you. I went upstairs, and I had this picture of you in my head as a little girl. No, I didn't mean it like that. That sounds stupid.
No, it doesn't.
No, what I meant was...
Turning to her.
I saw myself as the same, as not a bad person. And I know that you're not a bad person. And I know that you want to be a good person with me, too. And I want that, too.
Michael. I felt the same way, too. I don't want to lose you.
He turns his head, blinking and looking down.
You know, I guess what I had were these feelings for our relationship. When you looked at me, I knew I could never leave you.
As horrible as it's been?
Yeah, as horrible as it's been. It's not worth throwing away. There's something really worth saving here.
She nods and they exchange a smile. In the radio studio.
We've been eating at Mom's.
Actually, it's called Mother's. It's one of our favorite restaurants in New Orleans.
Well, it sure ain't my mother's home cooking. I wish my mother had cooked like this. My mother, unfortunately, was not a soul food cook, and this is great New Orleans soul food at its best.
Which means red beans and rice, a length of really wonderfully taut sausage.
Since I was a little girl, I've been afraid of losing people. The fact is, one way or the other, eventually you just do.
As a working person's cafe.
The thought of losing Michael frightened me so much that I almost did lose him. But in the end, figuring out how to be together and still allow each other our own separate lives made us even closer.
Jane stands in front of a room of EMTs reading from a book.
At the last meeting for the Grafton Volunteer Fire Company, the meeting came to order.
I also learned something else. Becoming part of a firehouse and working side by side with the men and women of the Grafton Volunteer Fire Department was the hardest thing I've ever done, and the most rewarding. And it helped me figure out something really interesting about fear. Fear is like a hologram. It seems real, filled with substance. And then, when you go beyond it, you realize it's just an illusion.
She flips the book shut and looks up, smiling at the room of faces. ITFC audio description.